Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. A lot going on this Monday. More violence against the police. Breaking news story we have for you. Also, U.S. storms. We had a few. There's a few more coming through, so information about the weather. The Winston Churchill bust, you might remember that, was sent back to Britain. It's coming back to the White House, apparently. And Al Sharpton promises season of civil disobedience in response to the Sessions nomination. That and more coming up, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. Grant, back from a weekend of camping for you, yeah? Went up to Arkansas and got away from your smartphone and life in general.
Yeah, I went a record 3 days and 4 hours without a single glance at any sort of digital screen.
And you didn't disappear?
No.
You're still alive?
Totally fine.
You said there was some snow over there. We had some snow here, too.
It got way, way into the negatives overnight. Actually, by the time it reached Saturday morning, it was plenty bright outside, and the thermometer said negative one. So you can imagine what it must have been overnight while it was still dark. It must have been probably negative five, negative 10.
Yeah, cold and snow, and a lot of the U.S. has been having that. We have some details about some of the weather that you can expect coming up over the next day or two here in the U.S., a lot of wintry weather, and a lot of storms in California as well. Before we get to that, though, kind of a breaking story here from CNN.com. Orlando police officer killed, gunmen on the loose, and the schools on lockdown at the time of this live broadcast anyway. It says an Orlando police officer was killed Monday, and a manhunt is underway for the gunman who shot her, the Orlando Police Department said. The Orlando Police Department family is heartbroken today, according to a tweet from the police force there. One of our own was taken in the line of duty, and there are no words. The authorities have identified the suspect as Markeith Lloyd, and they are on the lookout for him. So more details, I'm sure, will be coming out about that. Just another situation with an officer killed. Don't know if this was an intentional targeting or he was involved in a crime or, you know, what was happening there. But the number of officers being killed has really escalated. And I saw another story over the weekend. Baltimore and other cities like that, but Baltimore in particular, they're struggling to get officers. Nobody wants to join the force for obvious reasons.
Right. I just read that article from The Trumpet by Jeremiah Jacques yesterday called Land of the Free, Home of the 33,000 Violent Street Gangs. And he made the point about how it does become a vicious cycle where if you have leaders at the top of our government criticizing the police before they know all the facts of certain situations, that results in timid police, which then emboldens criminals. And then when you have emboldened criminals, the police are going to be even more timid or more prone to making mistakes. So it's a pretty terrible thing that's taking place. And now we just see people totally unafraid of lashing out at the police.
33,000 street gangs?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
a lot.
That is a lot. If you said 33,000 gang members, like that, I wouldn't have thought much about
1.4 million in the country. Wow. So that's three gang members for every two law enforcement officers.
Those aren't good odds, not good numbers. So just a bad situation is continuing kind of every few weeks. It seems like something happens. This is in Orlando. So, boy, Florida's had it rough, right? The Friday they had the shooting at the airport there in, Fort Lauderdale, I guess it was. And really weird situation there because the man checked the gun in. You can fly with a gun as long as it's checked in and it's locked up in some sort of a box, I guess. And then the ammunition has to be separate, I guess, from what they said. So we did that. But then when he got there, he got his luggage, took it out, went to the bathroom, loaded it, and then came out and killed people. So they interviewed, I think it was on CBS, they interviewed a sort of a security expert for the airports, and he said, well, you know, look, if you look at the overall numbers, it's not horrible. You know, you have more likely to get killed in a car accident than you are to be in a terror attack, but still it's a big deal. But he said there's so many soft targets, it's so hard to lock it all down. He said it's like a balloon where if you really clamp down on one spot, it inflates in another spot. And that's what happens. If you really clamp down on one area, the other area becomes softer, and they go after that area. So it's just a very difficult situation keeping airports and people safe.
Right. That situation on Friday just introduces a whole different element that we probably didn't even think of before. If a gunman is patient enough to check his gun in and wait until after he receives it on the baggage claim at his destination, he could just shoot then. You know, what's to stop someone from driving up to the place where you drop off passengers to go into the airport and then just shooting there? And there's just a ton of different ways that you could take advantage of innocent victims. You can't possibly stop all of them.
Yeah, and then what we saw in Jerusalem yesterday, where the guy, the Palestinian, I think he was, drove a truck and ran over some of the Israelis and killed, what was it, four or five, injured a bunch. Similar to what we saw happen a couple of times in the past year with terror attacks, most recently in Berlin. Get in a vehicle, a big vehicle, and run people over. It's just, it's craziness, but no matter what they do to try to lock it down, that evil still has a way of showing up, figuring out a new way to cause havoc, and then doing it.
Right. It does really require a change of the mind, a change in the way of thinking. We keep on introducing new rules and regulations, and at some point, wouldn't it just have to end in a police state? Isn't that the only way we could truly control all of these things? But then you'd be completely giving up all freedoms. So really, the only way to deal with this is changing the way of thinking.
Yeah, and even police states, they have a lot of problems too. And nobody wants to live in a police state, unless you're in charge, I guess. Mm-hmm. Then it's okay. But if you're everybody else, it's not great. Over the weekend, as mentioned, we had some storms here in this area and around the United States, some winter storms. And the U.S. is covered in snow and ice. They say an analysis of snow cover across the lower 48 showed that only Florida had no snow or ice on the ground. That's the only state in the lower 48 on Saturday and into early Sunday morning. Everybody else, we had a little bit of snow and ice. And so we had it here in Oklahoma. You guys had it there in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Everybody dealing with some slippery roads. Slow down. Be careful out there. I saw plenty of people going too fast.
Right. You were saying your son saw four people in the ditch, right?
Yeah.
Four different cars.
Yeah. And it's what happens is we got snow on Friday, and it was 3 to 4 inches. And so for the most part, I think people are cautious. And then it begins to dissipate because it warms up. But you still have a few roads and a few slick spots. And when I was coming in this morning to work, there's an ice patch that we hit. And what I do is I always learned you just don't accelerate or brake. You just cruise across it. Because if you brake or accelerate, chances are you're going to slide. So I just cruised across it. Well, the guy behind me, he wasn't having any of it. He was right up on my tail. And I had a turn. I mean, it was my turn. I put the blinker on, gave him plenty of time, but I could hear he had to hit the brakes because he was too close to me, and I could hear him swerving. I think he was okay. But there's no need for that. Just relax. Because, you know, the road's fine, and all of a sudden you hit that ice patch, and if you're going too fast or if you're not paying attention and you need to stop all of a sudden, good luck.
Right, and especially on those roads, those two entrances to campus, there are a lot of dips in those roads. So if you're coming out of the gate, it's a little bit difficult to tell over the top of each hill on either side if a car's coming, especially if they decide they're going to go 20 miles over the speed limit.
Yeah, when it's icy, you have to just assume that you will not be able to stop in a normal amount of space. So give everybody a little more space.
Right.
Because even if you start slipping, you can usually be okay and, you know, reset it. It's when people get too close to each other. So anyway, that happens in different places. Unfortunately, different accidents do occur. And a lot of ice and snow out there in the lower 48. California is supposed to have a lot of storms. They've had some already. They need rain because they've been in massive drought. But they tend to get it in these huge storms that come in and do a lot of damage. Central, northern California, massive storms have started through there. A lot of rain coming through. 3 to 8 inches forecast with another 1 to 2 meters of snow. You can tell this wasn't written in the U.S. I don't think likely for higher elevation. So they've gotten a lot of snow, a lot of rain. In a sense, it's good, but then in another sense, mudslides, other problems.
They really do seem to have a ton of weather extremes with the massive earthquakes. It seems like every year or two we hear of another huge earthquake in California, and then they have wildfires that once they get started, they seem to blaze half the state, and now rain's so heavy that it floods. I mean, they don't really get too many normal conditions.
Unless you're down there in Southern California where it's beautiful. Of course, they are in drought too, but...
They could always fall into the center of the earth during an earthquake. So.
That is true. They could separate. there is... this is a kind of a sad thing in relation to California there. A famous California sequoia tree, estimated to be more than 1,000 years old, toppled in a giant storm over the weekend. It's the famous pioneer cabin tree. The sequoia had a tunnel carved into it 135 years ago that was big enough for cars, horses, and people to pass through, and it fell over.
Oh, no.
So that one's gone. There are no other living tunnel tree sequoias left. There are 3 tunnel tree redwoods. But wow. The sequoia is gone.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of one of those 4 trees at least. I'm not sure which, but it's pretty incredible to see a tree that's so thick that you can drive an entire car through it. Maybe the reason the tree fell down is because it had a tunnel at its base.
Yeah, they said, I guess you've got to be a tree expert, but this guy said it's not good to make a giant tunnel in the middle of a tree.
It just seems like it would make it a little bit unstable.
A little tough for all the nutrients to get to the top. But it was there for a long time, and then it fell over. So because of the rain and because of the loosening of the soil and wind or whatever, and all those years of wear and tear, the thing finally fell down. So that would be strange to have seen it there all those years and get up one day and be like, hey, that guy fell over.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that out in the Arkansas wilderness over the weekend. Like, what have these trees seen, you know, over the years? I think there's all kinds of wild boars and crazy things out there, and I'm sure a lot of people go camping, but a tree that's been alive for 1,000 years, if it could talk, what kind of stories would it tell?
Oh, yeah. It's always interesting. I guess you count the rings, right? That's mm-hmm. how you determine the age. And so when we were in California a few years ago, we went to it like sort of a national park area, and they had some trees, big, not this big, but big, and it had fallen over, and they cut the trail through it, you know, because it had fallen over. And it was kind of neat to sit there, and that was one of the things, you know, with the sign, can you count the rings and figure out how old it is? And I spent about 30 seconds counting, and I said, I'm just going to look at the sign. And it told me how old it was. I didn't have the patience. There were a lot of rings, though. And I guess you can always tell good years from bad years in terms of precipitation. Bigger ring, more growth, more precipitation, narrow drought.
That's really interesting how the tree is basically a recording of its own life.
Yeah, it's really pretty fascinating. So that big tree there in California, unfortunately, the pioneer cabin tree fell over. What do you do with it? You cut it up, use it for something, or I don't know, just leave it there?
Seems like you need to enshrine it in a museum somewhere to give it the proper respect.
You know, what I would do is I would cut the base of it off where the carving or where the tunnel was and preserve that because it's kind of neat. And cut up the rest of it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Turn it into something.
Keep the tunnel. I'm sure people like driving through a wooden tunnel anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad it didn't fall over when somebody was driving through.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been horrifying. Hey, kids, you know, and the thing falls over. Even if it didn't land on you, just the fact that it fell over, I don't know, it'd be kind of a neat story, I guess.
Might be some guilt there.
Did we do it? Were we responsible for it? I thought it was like a time portal. You run through that thing and you come out on the other side. One of my neighbors, actually. Hope they're not listening. No, I'm just kidding. I hope they are. There is a, they have a tree and it's got sort of a little natural kind of cave at the base of it, a little small tree, you know. And a lot of trees have that. And so they thought it'd be a good idea to like paint it and make it look like a little home. And they put like a little garden gnome in there. I'm a little bit afraid of it, actually. I don't like it.
Well, it sounded adorable until you said you're afraid of it. So maybe I'm not getting the right mental
just
image.
Those little gnomes that just look at you, and it's like he lives there. I don't. I've seen another one. I think it was at a park around here where there's a little natural notch at the bottom, and somebody put a door on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's inviting and terrifying at the same time. What's behind the door?
That kind of reminds me of like Alice in Wonderland for some reason. just yeah. trees coming alive or something like that.
Who put the door there? Yeah, it's interesting. So anyway, this big tree went down, sadly. They have a really neat picture that they just released from NASA. NASA's always doing some pretty great things, I think, in terms of showing us about space. They say, here's what Earth looks like from Mars. We've all seen the Earth from the moon, that famous picture. Well, there's a new one now. NASA released a stunning image on Friday showing our home planet as well as the moon from Mars. You get a real good perspective of where, how far the moon is away and what the size is. The agency notes, from the most powerful telescope orbiting Mars comes a new view of Earth and its moon, showing continent size detail on the planet and the relative size of the moon. So you can find that at NASA, I think it's .gov. They've got a new picture there. Pretty cool.
Yeah, must be. Is it a really tiny image, or do they zoom in a lot?
It's a pretty good size image. Okay. I mean, you know, it's because when I first read it, I was thinking, you know, it'd be really tiny. But you can see the Earth pretty well and the Moon. The Earth looks a little blurry, right. but it obviously stands out. I mean, if you're looking at space and you're looking at these different planets and everything's gray and yucky, and then you got this beautiful blue and green Earth sitting there.
With some wispy white around it.
Yeah, I mean, it looked really pretty amazing. So I don't know that, I don't think we've ever seen an image like that before. No one's ever taken a shot from Mars that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I didn't even realize we had equipment out that far.
Yeah, so they got a neat image of that. You can check that out. It's at NASA.gov or AOL. It's got the story and the link, too, if you want to see that. So they're always out there taking some pretty cool pictures. You ever wonder where the exact center of the United States is?
Yes.
You have a guess?
Nebraska?
The town of Center, which is funny that that's the name. I guess they thought they were the center. The town of Center, North Dakota, they say is taking center stage. I feel like there should be a drum hit there. thanks to a geographer who has figured out that it's in the dead center of North America. I guess there's been some debate over the years, like how would you determine it exactly? The finding, they say, lays to rest the decades-old question on the location of the continent's bullseye. It's a question that has long eluded scientists. In a 1964 report by the U.S. Geological Survey, for instance, experts wrote, there is no generally accepted definition of geographic center of any geographic area and no completely satisfactory method for determining it. They think they've determined it, and they think that it is Center, North Dakota.
Wow.
So I guess, you know, sometimes you'll say to somebody, hey, you're not the center of the universe. You're not the center of the world. You're not the center of the U.S. Well, in this case, they are. So you can't say that to them.
I am the center of North America.
Well, I am the center of the U.S. So that's, I don't know. There's not a lot up there in North Dakota.
Yeah. I guess if you include Canada, that would make it the center of the entire continent. I was thinking with my guess, that's why I was so far off, that it was only America.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they did say, yeah. I guess it would be
because
North
Dakota is way up there.
It is, yeah.
So it would have to include Canada.
Yeah. So the that is the center there, for whatever that is worth. If you're going through that area, I'm sure they'll have a sign. You could stop by and get a T-shirt or something.
It sounds like a special place to visit.
It does.
Might make a vacation stop there.
I don't. I would change the name to Bullseye. Like that sounds a little cooler than Center to me.
You wouldn't want to get shot at though.
Probably not. Sometimes you go through some of those areas and you think they already have been. You go through the Badlands of South Dakota, you think somebody did do something.
Yeah, it's like Wild West shootouts were just recently taking place there.
That's true. That's a lot of their tourism, I guess, the old Cowboy West. Of course, these couple of stories are happening. Golden Globe Awards last night. I don't watch it. Not interested in it, but somebody is, I guess. I don't know what their ratings are. I can't imagine they'd be great. Meryl Streep, Jimmy Fallon, and more use Golden Globe stage to slam Donald Trump. That's shocking, isn't it, that they would do something like that? Just minutes into the show, host Jimmy Fallon used his time on stage to take digs at Trump after he was forced to improvise for the first few minutes of the show due to a broken teleprompter. His teleprompter broke, I guess, and he didn't know what to do or say. Now, that would be awkward, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does say something about the quality of the entertainers. It does seem like entertainers from years ago could have winged it and done okay.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as the teleprompter stops, they don't know what to do. And that's like a lot of politicians, too.
Yeah, it's like basically the best actors at any of these shows are just good at reading a teleprompter for about 9 minutes for their monologue, you know, at the ESPY Awards, the Sports Awards as well. And obviously, politicians, when they're reading a speech, it's off a teleprompter the whole time, and it's pretty funny when the teleprompter breaks and you see 30 seconds of stuttering in a row.
I wish that they would get rid of the teleprompters just for political speeches, mm-hmm. or even for these shows. That'd be more interesting to me if it was just kind of they could do it from memory or they sort of ad-libbed. I'd rather see that than see a teleprompter.
Yeah, I wonder if for political reasons they wouldn't do that because of them possibly speaking their mind too much and revealing what they're actually thinking instead of what they've been told to say.
Yeah, I think that's exactly why that would happen, but that's why I want to hear it without the teleprompter.
Yeah.
Tell
that's
us what
why
you're...
Mr. Trump was so refreshing. Seemed like he wasn't using one.
That's always a joke on those when they're making fun of newsreaders. They'll put in like a random question mark, and so they say the statement like a question, you know, and things like that. Or they just read whatever is there. They don't know what's going on. Anyway, once Jimmy Fallon's script was up and running, he called the Golden Globes one of the few places left where America still honors the popular vote. Sadly, though, that's actually not true. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association, a collection of 85 members, they have their own methods of selecting winners. They don't win by popular vote.
Wow.
I mean, the most popular movies very rarely win awards. It's mm-hmm. nothing to do with popular vote. It's an academy. It's like the Electoral College.
Isn't it, though? Because I'm pretty sure every time a movie wins an award, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
And everyone else is wondering what's even in the movie because they haven't seen it either.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Very rarely do they win. I suppose it happens occasionally, but very often it is some strange film you've never heard of before.
Probably judged by film experts, people who maybe are more educated in the field than we are, so maybe their voice should have a little bit more impact.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Sometimes you read the reviews of films, and I need a review of the review. Like, what were you even talking about there?
It's pretty deep.
It does, yeah. And I wonder if they actually are accurate or if the people that made the movie are like, whoa, we didn't mean that at all, but hey, whatever, give us an award. Sometimes it happens or somebody writes something or songs especially, and people read all these meanings into it, and years later they ask them, they're like, we had no idea, it just kind of sounded good. But people have read in all these meanings to it.
Yeah, know? Just throwing together random lyrics because they happen to rhyme.
Yeah, like to rhyme, do it all the time. And then after the Jimmy Fallon got his shots in, Meryl Streep, she got all serious and said that Trump's behavior, quote, sank its hooks in my heart. And she slammed what she called Trump's, quote, instinct to humiliate. She asked for a principled press to hold Trump accountable and to call him out for every outrage. Her comments were met with applause, tears, and support by her fellow actors in the audience. Hard to say if it was sincere, they're all actors.
All fake tears.
Fake tears. They can cry in command. Actor Chris Pine called her speech the best message of tonight. So they got their digs in on the president-elect.
That was so 2 months ago. Why are they still dwelling on the issue?
Yeah, they want to get their shots in. And I think probably, obviously, they're preaching to the choir, as they say. And the people in the room probably agree with them. Or if they don't, they would be shouted down, so they won't say mm-hmm. much. But probably their big misstep is that they think everybody agrees with them and they kind of live in their bubble. And my guess would be that there's a fair number watching, if they do watch these shows, that don't agree with that. And they're not interested in their political viewpoint.
Yeah, it's amazing. Their ignorance really has become astounding lately, especially during the last election, because I've seen a few of those late night shows and those people are meant to be funny, and yet here they are on the verge of tears. They're delivering some impassioned speech as if that's why people even tune in to watch them in the first place. Obviously not. People are there for some humor and really to stay away from the political lines.
Oh, exactly. I mean, let's say something happens that's serious in the country. Do people say, quick, what does Jimmy Fallon have to say about this? Get Meryl Streep on the phone. We need some guidance. I mean, they're entertainers, and they are pretty good at what they do in a sense. But that's all they are. It's entertainers. And when they try to cross over into being the wise sage, that's just not their it's not in their wheelhouse.
No, and it's kind of sad that as a society we give so much credibility to these random people who are not experts in those fields. For example, we give athletes a pretty gigantic political voice when, sure, it's nice that people have opinions, but are they really experts in those areas?
Yeah. So that happened, and then this other one happened, and I like this one because it's about my Packers. Odell Beckham is a receiver for the Giants. Victor Cruz and other Giant wide receivers, they warm up shirtless in frigid Green Bay. So it was about 1 degrees when they came on the field, and it got to a high of 13. Wind chill was about one. And they, you know, people go up to Green Bay to play, and they're always afraid of the cold, so they wanted to show they were tough, so they came out with no shirts on. And then they couldn't catch a ball after that, and they got smoked. But nevertheless, they had no shirts.
Yeah, they're up there playing in New Jersey, but they call it New York, so you'd think that they would also be accustomed to some cold.
Well, the thing about it, and I grew up in that area, and the thing about the cold is it is cold. I don't care who you are. It's not like the people up there don't feel it anymore. We all feel it. It's cold. It's miserable. So you just dress for the weather. You know, I never got like the tough guy sort of, like, I'm not going to wear a shirt. Well, I don't care. I mean, I am. Because I want to, you know, they couldn't do that for more than maybe 5 or 10 minutes without frostbite or other problems. So I know they're trying to prove a point, but I just don't feel like it proved anything other than it's kind of stupid.
Wouldn't that have a bad impact on their bodies? Like, wouldn't that cause a lot of chafing and things like that too? And then they have to put tight-fitting athletic shirts and pads over that, and they'd just be chafing under their uniforms all day.
I don't know, but I thought they have a lot of tattoos. I thought maybe the tattoos keep them warm. It's like a
it's like a suit.
It's like a stick-on shirt or something. But so anyway, they lost to the Packers. So too bad for them. If you're a New York Giants fan, you know, yay for me.
You realize how blessed you are as a sports fan? Because this year you've been saying how terrible the Packers defense is, and they've been having a bad year, and yet here they are going to the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, they've.
I've never seen the Bills make the playoffs once.
Yeah, it's and you're in Bills colors today. You kind of got the blue and red going on.
Totally unintentional. It's just in my heart.
By the way, I bought my son a pack of football cards yesterday. He got a Jim Kelly, retro Jim Kelly Bills quarterback card. So anyway, that's for whatever that's worth. this is Trumpet Radio Live. Dwight Falk with you here today. Grant Turgeon and Abraham Blondo stopping by as well. Abraham, you're not an NFL guy. You're CFL, Canadian Football League. Who won the Grey Cup? That's what it's called, right?
Cup? The Ottawa Red Blacks won. They
pretty
beat
big
the Calgary
upset.
St. Peters. Yeah.
That's a confusing name to me. The Red Blacks?
Yes. It's
the red
after,
and they're black.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. I think it's a bird.
Oh, okay.
Like a red-winged blackbird.
Well,
I think that's what they're named
after. Well, good for them, because that's not offensive really to anybody.
That's right.
Probably. Maybe it is.
They cover the blackbirds and the redbirds. Yeah.
Because in the U.S., they make a really big deal about sports names. They want to get rid of certain team names and whatever people's opinion is on that. But you start running out of names after a while. What are you going to call?
Yeah.
Hey, it's the Blues versus the Oranges. Yeah. You know, you just got to start going with colors, and that would offend somebody.
Yeah.
So it's hard.
Yeah, it's either the bird or it's the war paint of Indian tribes in the area, but I'm pretty sure that's not
bird.
It's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Interesting. The Key David program is coming your way here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Richard Palmer, today from Edstone, England, filling in for regular host Stephen Fleury. And Music for Life, also a new program coming up today. There's a concert coming to Armstrong Auditorium this Thursday. You can get information at armstrongauditorium.org. And the program is a preview of that concert that's coming up on Thursday. So make sure you listen for that coming up today. Or you can get the archives at kpcg.fm. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to email us, please do that. Comments at kpcg.fm. We're happy to see those. Take a look at those. It's kind of interesting here. This report just came out that a U.S. Navy ship has fired a warning shot at Iranian boats. So the Strait of Hormuz, that's where that happened. It's situated between the Gulf of Oman and the Persian Gulf. And apparently these Iranian boats were coming at us, and we warned them in a lot of ways and then had to fire some warning shots. So they were being very aggressive there in the straits.
Yeah. It was actually the same vessel, the USS Mason. It was the same vessel that had Houthis fire anti-ship rockets at it a couple months ago, or about a month ago or something like that. Same ship, same patrol route it takes there in the area. And but this time it wasn't Houthis, it was the Iranians themselves that were acting very aggressive with these small kind of patrol boats they have in the area. From what I read, they fired more flares rather than actual live ammunition at the Iranian boats. But still, that's not really what allies do to each other in on the high seas.
It's a game of tag. Just keep it on your toes. Yeah, the destroyer fired warning shots and used radio calls, flares, bells, and whistles. Ding, 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 ding.
They use everything.
They threw the kitchen sink at them to signal the ships to stay away. There was no response to the radio calls. They haven't developed a radio yet in Iran, but they are developing nukes. So they, yeah, they're going through this back and forth. In another note about Iran, Iran is to receive a huge shipment of natural uranium from Russia to compensate it for exporting tons of reactor coolant, diplomats say, in a move approved by the outgoing U.S. administration and other governments seeking to keep Tehran committed to a landmark nuclear pact. Well, let's give them some uranium. That'd be fine. That'll keep them on the straight and narrow.
The nuclear deal that they never even signed in the first place and that they've broken dozens of times.
Well, yeah, and I guess the red line there would be if they do anything, there'll be more bells and whistles.
The thing is, we've already allowed them to harass and like just come right up next to our ships. And so this time, of course, they probably didn't even expect us to take a shot.
Well, right, yeah, you can tell by their behavior that they're not expecting anything. You blow one of those ships sky high,
right.
They'd probably rethink it. But then it'd be an international thing, and Iran would come out and say, well, we're not going to go through with this deal, which, like you say, they never signed.
We'd be unilaterally condemned in the United Nations, of course.
Right. It would be a bad situation. So, yeah, anyway, that's what's going on with Iran. Abraham, you have an interesting story for us here from The Telegraph. The famous Winston Churchill bust that was sent away, I guess, right? This is the same one?
Yes.
It is set for Oval Office return by Donald Trump. It's coming home.
Yes, so this is the, there's a lot of controversy around this one. It was a bust given to George W. Bush when he was president by Tony Blair. It was head sat in the Oval Office, and when President Obama came to office, he chose not to extend like the lease or the agreement to keep it, so he sent it back.
That's a very diplomatic way of saying that.
Yes, thank you.
I think actually, he just didn't want it and he got rid of it. But
it made
yeah.
me feel okay about what he did for a second there.
But I mean, that's how they explain it through right. the White House. Mm-hmm. And they sent it back. And of course, this has been fraught with controversy because it is some very symbolic of how President Obama feels towards Winston Churchill and Great Britain. I believe President Obama also gave Gordon Brown an iPod full of President Obama's speeches on it as a gift.
Oh, that went to the Queen, too.
Oh, the Queen,
or,
yes.
I don't know if it went to Gordon Brown, but I know it went to the Queen. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
That was, you know, here, nice to meet you, Your Majesty. Here's an iPod full of my speeches.
Yeah.
Something to put you to bed at night.
Yeah, just some odd gifts. I think there's...
I would have given him a video of me shooting jumpers.
Yeah.
2 hours on loop.
Enjoy.
Enjoy this.
It's the same jumper, just looped for 2 hours.
The one I made.
Yeah. And he also gave DVDs to a British prime minister as a gift. Just some very odd things to do to your greatest ally. And
it's like something you do to your bro, not to your ally.
This is what you do to those in-laws you don't like, not to your greatest trading, one of your biggest world partners in geopolitics.
And DVDs are old technology, so it's like a double slap in the face. Why don't you just give them some 8-tracks?
but yes, so there's a lot of odd vibes coming from Washington with Britain, and this the bust really emphasizes and epitomizes them all. And there's a lot of controversy as well when Boris Johnson, when he was mayor, now he's the foreign secretary, he said that President Obama sending back the bust reflects his ancestral dislike of the British Empire because in Kenya, it seems there's some indications that President Obama's grandfather was tortured or arrested for anti-colonial activities there. So there could be, I think there's something to that. But in any event, Donald Trump said he will gladly take back the bust. Nigel Farage came over and they had a long talk a while ago. And Donald Trump would like to have the bust back in the Oval Office. So I think this is a more of a move, not necessarily of Donald Trump liking Winston Churchill or Great Britain, but more of an anti-Obama policy. It's a big media gain for him, and I think it does show that Donald Trump will be very more friendly to Great Britain, especially with Great Britain leaving the EU. they'll be kind of stranded there outside the common market. So I think they'll really cling to the United States, and this is a big indication that he will be very friendly towards Great Britain and its policies.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's kind of, you know, petty back and forth. You know, we don't want your president, now we're going to take it back. And I'm glad he is bringing it back. But, it does seem like it would be a bit of a dig, too, at the outgoing administration, because he knows it would probably gall President Obama to see that thing sitting there again.
Yeah.
Just set it there and leave it. But what did they replace it with? It was, they always had somebody else there.
Martin Luther King.
Is that Martin Luther King? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was probably him. I couldn't tell from the, I'm not a great at discerning busts and who they are. But
right.
Yeah, and that was okay, you know, I guess. But it was definitely a change in thinking towards one of our allies, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's almost like he didn't realize that Mr. Churchill saved the entire Western world. What would he have rather had happen in World War II? Germany winning?
Right, exactly. And it ties in, like you were talking about President Obama's grandfather, and I don't know what the history is there, but even that goes into sort of that modern narrative that, you know, the UK was going around causing all kinds of problems. And you can nitpick and you can find some things, but they brought a lot of good to a lot of places in this world. And that's the history that's ignored.
Yeah, I think this is for a lot of us, this does seem very petty, like you said. But in diplomacy, these type of symbolic things are very important. Just like when Napoleon threw his hat on the ground in front of the Tsar of Russia to see if he would pick it up for him, and the Tsar refused to, because Napoleon wanted to see if the Tsar would basically be his servant.
Mm-hmm.
So just these little symbolic things actually do mean a lot in world affairs. And I think now there is another bust of Churchill in the White House that's always been there. But at the same time, this was a personal decision by President Obama. And as you said, I think it reflects his thinking globally and ideologically that we have seen over the past eight years where he dislikes any kind of foreign aggression or intervention by Britain or America in the world, and that he does view our past as more of a disgrace than something to be glorified. So I think this is just an indication of how he was thinking, and that he didn't want to follow in the footsteps of his predecessors.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the change now. So we'll see what happens with the Donald Trump administration. And you know, this is just speaking of Donald Trump, you know, President-elect Trump. What's going on with, the media and the way they're still kind of going after him? I was wondering if it would change a little bit. Maybe it still will, but they still seem pretty, and they're very pro-President Obama, very anti-Donald Trump. So I don't know. I kind of thought it might change a little bit, but it seems like it's still going that way. You know, Meryl Streep calls for a media to really hold them accountable. Well, I would agree with that, but I would say you'd have to hold everybody accountable. You can't pick and choose who you hold accountable. If she wants to talk about holding the new president accountable, I think that's great. How about the current one? Why not hold him accountable, too? That hasn't happened. So it'll be interesting to see how the world views the U.S. and views Donald Trump and even the media here or the people in this country.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really struck out to me over the past couple of weeks is that the more the media tries to uncover the hypocrisy of Donald Trump, they just reveal more and more of their own hypocrisy. Of when President Obama was elected, were they vetting him like they are vetting Donald Trump? Not even close. There is no comparison. And even the accusations leveled against Trump, calling him a liar, saying he always creates narratives to fit what he says and to cover his tracks. That's exactly what President Obama has done masterfully for the past 8 years. And so every president should be accountable, no matter what party, no matter who they are. There should be accountability. The media should hold them to their words, to their promises, and they should be vetted very rigorously. However, the problem is there's a very clear double standard, and they're really endangering the American public by favoring one side or the other and not revealing a lot of the destructive things that have already happened inside this nation before President Donald Trump even takes office.
Yeah, it's not like it's been a real smooth 8 years. We haven't maybe seen the fruits, the ripe fruits of everything come to bear yet, but certainly a lot of problems that are in the making. So that's a write-up from the Telegraph. Winston Churchill bus set for Oval Office return by Donald Trump. We'll see if that actually occurs. Grant, here's a story you've got, too. This is from PJ Media 2 related headlines. Sharpton, Al Sharpton, our buddy, promises season of civil disobedience in response to Sessions nomination. And then the related headline is African-American Hill staffer says that in 20 years, Senator Sessions hasn't said anything offensive or racist. What's the problem with Sessions?
Right. This is MSNBC host, believe it or not, Al Sharpton, talking about how he's going to have a day of civil disobedience. Really, he has had a life of civil disobedience, if you think about it. He's actually been jailed for 3 months for protesting on U.S. Navy land. He's kind of always been about stirring people up or doing things that are borderline illegal to get a point across.
Well, I mean, everybody, I mean, even like the liberal media makes fun of him. I mean, he's not. What do they call him? A race hustler, right? Because he's trying to stir up problems because it gives him a voice and it gives him some relevance. That's why he has a television show. And I don't know who watches it, but yeah, he needs this for his own relevance. And so you always have to question his motives.
Right. Yeah, he's actually planning a march on January 14th in Washington. That's over the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday weekend. So pretty symbolic there. A man who really campaigned for racial equity in the country and then to have a protest against a supposed racist on that weekend.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see. You know, they like to appropriate his name, Martin Luther King, and so forth. But some of the things that he said in his speeches were really, I thought, pretty noble, actually. And but they don't subscribe to them.
No.
You know, like the most famous probably being a man being judged by the content of his character and not the color of his skin. That's great. That's great. And that's biblical. Are they doing that? Are they judging by the content of character? Do we want to talk about character now? I don't think so.
Yeah, the closest they're getting is judging a man on the content of his character only if his skin color is the one that they prefer. And usually even then they're not doing that. So they really have taken the name of someone who actually did have some pretty good motives, and they're just throwing a lot of their evil motives underneath that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was that a lot of the idea was to try to bring equality, you know, give everybody a fair chance at, you know, success in life. But now it's being turned into using it to try to gain an upper hand, you know, and throwing out the accusations of racism or things like that, whatever it might be. There's a lot of terms in there. And to get your way, to get what you want, to get your person in office or to cause trouble. And so it's really been that idea of racial equality and so forth has really been perverted, I think.
Right. And even it's important to consider the time in which Martin Luther King gave a lot of his key speeches, because if I remember correctly, that was a time when we were either just coming off of segregation or were trying to. Every hotel was segregated, even buses. The black people had to sit in the back. Schools were segregated. You couldn't even drink out of the same water fountain or use the same restroom as someone else of a different skin color. That was the time that Martin Luther King Jr. was speaking, and we still have people today claiming that minorities don't have any rights when really we're living in a totally different world. So there's a lot of deception going on, and it seems like there's a lot of effort to make people upset when what's the need for that? I mean, we have really come so far since 60, 70 years ago.
So they're upset. I mean, they'd be upset about a lot of things, but primarily about Jeff Sessions.
Right.
And some of the things, Huffington Post has a little write-up here. No surprise. 8 reasons the Senate must reject Jeff Sessions. They say one of them is because he voted yes on a constitutional ban of same-sex marriage. Doesn't sound too bad.
Doesn't.
That's one of their big ones.
Yeah, it's Jeff Sessions. If you look at his career, it's spotless. As a politician, he's done a lot of good things. But he's not center Republican. He is a little more conservative than some of them. And he also had some pretty influential ideas in the election with Donald Trump and that kind of thing. So I think a lot of people are using that one event where people are misconstruing what he said as a racist comment just to get him out of the way, because he does have some ideas that could derail the liberal agenda with legislation, that kind of thing. So I think they just want him out of the way rather than it's anything legitimate.
This is a really a mind-bending quote here from this Huffington Post writer. He says, he talks about Jeff Sessions. He's been, you know, in a particular church for many years. And then he says, but he has not in a half a century of public life demonstrated any willingness to turn from evil and learn to do good. Oh, really? Really? So this guy, this writer here, now he determines good and evil? Because really, if you want to look at the Bible's definition of good and evil, it looks like he's actually holding to that. I mean, why even talk about good and evil if it's just going to be your own idea? Why not throw that out the window? Because to say something like that, he hasn't learned to turn from evil and do good because he voted against same-sex marriage? So you're the judge and jury now.
And yet that same writer is probably totally fine with the Supreme Court pushing through same-sex marriage across the country.
Oh, absolutely. And another thing that Jeff Sessions opposed, he opposed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crime Prevention Act. If memory serves me correctly, that was that bogus case. Mm-hmm. Where it was they made it out like it was a hate crime. It had nothing to do with that. It was a lot of other stuff. I think that's even written about in our in the book you can find at thetrumpet.com, Redefining Family. That thing was totally turned upside down, and they made it out like it was this big hate crime, and it wasn't that.
Right. So basically what they are accusing him of is trying to cling to the last bit of sanity possible when everyone else is losing their minds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his name escapes me, but the guy in the Reagan administration that they didn't let into the Supreme Court.
Bork.
Yes, Robert Bork.
Right, yeah. And they went after him like crazy because he was somewhat trying to hold to true values, mm-hmm. and they couldn't stand it. That's the same situation here.
Right, and it's even interesting thinking about the way that Al Sharpton has proposed talking to these people who are going to vote or to approve Sessions' appointment. They are going to actually pay some visits to these senators' offices, and they're going to make house calls to help these people understand how much of a racist Jeff Sessions is. I mean,
so they're threatening everybody.
Yeah, it sounds like they're Black Panthers all over again, just going around threatening people.
It's like a child at the grocery store. You know, mommy can have a candy bar? No. Throw themselves on the ground, kick and scream, and punch the floor until you give me what I want.
Right.
It's Al Sharpton. I mean, he has a reputation of where he's already destroyed his own reputation, so I doubt that he'll really get anywhere with this. But what is interesting is that someone with his voice can cause such a commotion and really try to disrupt the whole democratic process we have in this country. Now, if you're talking about a danger to democracy, is it someone like Jeff Sessions who has served American democracy for 50 years? Or is it someone like Al Sharpton who at every possible turn disobeys the laws of the land? And that's what he does. He disobeys the laws to get attention or to make a point or something. But it's disrupting democracy. It's not aiding it. And that's something that Martin Luther King Jr. did well. Is everything he did was within the law. If you look at his rallies, they were peaceful. He used the laws to the advantage of trying to get equality, and he had, like you said, he had some noble ideas, but he didn't break the law to get his way. And that's something that these men like Al Sharpton miss, is that they think the system needs to be torn down. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that's why they hate someone like Jeff Sessions, because he upholds the system.
Well, but the irony, of course, is somebody like an Al Sharpton, does he want to live in a society of his own making where nobody keeps law? Of course not. Because he wouldn't survive. Nobody would.
How would he appreciate those house calls, you know, to his own house?
Sure.
Someone else trying to use intimidation tactics against him. And, you know, maybe if Jeff Sessions really was some vile person, he could try to justify some questionable actions trying to prevent Jeff Sessions from being appointed. But the thing is here, this man, this is the other article that I had. William Smith actually worked for Jeff Sessions as the chief counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee for 20 years. And he said, and he's a black man, and for those 20 years, he never heard Jeff Sessions say anything, or and he never saw him do anything that could have even been perceived as racist. And if you think about it, this man was recounting times where he spent hours in some heated situations with Jeff Sessions. And in those types of heated moments, that's when maybe you could see a racist popping off with some sort of, you know, slur. And he never once did that. That his true character, I guess you could call it, was never revealed. I mean, there was no racist invective coming out of his mouth any of those times.
Well, it's good somebody that was there stands up and says something for him. He'll be ignored by most people, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But this Huffington Post thing talking about Jeff Sessions, they say the positions and policies Senator Sessions has supported do not uplift America's shared values of love, justice, and mercy. Well, those are nice sounding words, but come on now. I mean, are the policies coming from the radical left, are they full of love, justice, and mercy? Where's love for the traditional family? Where's love for people's rights to not support abortion, things like that? And then the other thing, too, that's interesting about all of this is I lost my train of thought now. I was thinking about justice and mercy so much. I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, it's interesting just to see how they throw all these. I know what it was. There's a story out about the CEO of a company in California, this woman in San Francisco. And she tweeted over the weekend that the reason there's not more jobs in the middle of America is because everybody there is stupid. You know, and she's radical left. So when you want to talk about love, justice, and mercy, and she said a lot worse than that. That's just that's a lot of us, right? That's what percentage of America, a huge percentage. Mm-hmm. So they want to talk about love, justice, and mercy, and then they say things like that. And it's coming out of the same ideology. Come on. It's craziness. There's no love, justice, and mercy talking that way against at least half of your fellow countrymen.
Yet more hypocrisy on display there, where their love, justice, and mercy is only possibly demonstrated toward those who agree with them. And even then, you couldn't really call it love, justice, and mercy. I mean, giving someone a handout isn't necessarily love. It really does tear down character, for example.
Well, it's all lawlessness. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. You might as well call it what it is, which is lawlessness.
Right. And this man, William Smith, who worked for Jeff Sessions for so long, he actually pointed out that like we were talking about, the liberals were going back decades to that one man who supposedly was a black man who had been called boy and had been told to watch how he talks to white people. Apparently, that man is actually dead, and there were no other witnesses to anything that he said. So you can't go back and talk to this dead man, obviously,
right.
And there are no witnesses to corroborate his supposed story, a dead man's story. I don't know if they even somehow got that story before he was dead or not, but whose word are you going to take there? The dead man who has no witnesses, or someone who's worked with him for 20 years who is also black and would have every reason to call him a racist if he really were one?
Yeah, it's amazing how when somebody that's more on the conservative side comes up, the media will go over their life with a fine-tooth comb. Mm-hmm. Every turn, no stone left unturned. And then when somebody's coming from the radical left side, no big deal. No need to look at that. If you question it, you're a racist, you're a whatever. There's a million different terms out there now, depending on, you know, what would fit, I guess. But it's just a very different way of going about the quote-unquote vetting process.
Yeah, one thing they really can't stand is someone who might defy their idea of identity politics. For example, they can't stand someone like Ben Carson, who is a distinguished physician who is also become a successful politician and even someone who has vouched for Mr. Trump rather successfully. They hate that because they think that all minorities should be in their camp. They think that every transgender or homosexual should be in their camp, and they can't stand it when people in these different groups disagree with them, when really what does skin color or any sort of orientation have to do with your beliefs in general?
It's PJ Media. Sharpton promises season of civil disobedience. But he's just going to do for one day? It's a season, but he's just going to have one march, I guess?
January 14th is okay. The planned march.
That's what? That's this Saturday? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens. I remember years ago when they did the Million Man March. Not that many people showed up.
Yeah.
I don't remember how many it was, but they kept calling it the Million Man March. Well, we'll see who comes out for this march over there. And then, of course, the inauguration is coming up on what? The
20th.
20th.
Yeah, next week.
Friday.
So, well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's going to be an eventful week. And it's going to be a warm week here for us. We're going to be up in the 60s, so yay for us. And all the snow is going to go away, and then it's supposed to do something next weekend. Big storms in California, lots going on with the weather. All kinds of things happening in the U.S. and around the world, and in the world of Al Sharpton as well. Another season of disobedience is continuing. That'll do it for us here on Trumpet Radio Live today. Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and also Music for Life coming up later today. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Londo, have a great Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.